Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, June 17th, and we are starting off. Our news is a little thin this week, or our store news, actually.
That's weak.
Sorry. But first of all, Free RPG Day is this Saturday, June 20th. Come out, get some Free RPG Day stuff. There'll be a variety of like Pathfinders in there. There's Shadowrun. There's all kinds of stuff. Come out and get some RPG stuff.
You know what the funnest game that I got at a previous Free RPG one?
What's that?
What was it called? It was like the retro 40s sci-fi one.
Cosmic Patrol.
Yeah. Just a little cheapy little pamphlet type indie book.
We might even have some of those left for this year.
Yeah. And that's one of those. Those are the kind of cool discoveries you can make at this thing.
Yep. Then, of course, June 27th, a week from Saturday, is All Ages Awesomeness 5. Getting real excited for that. We got a lot of people come in doing sketching and signing and that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, you posted that image from one of the artists the other day.
Yeah, Jake Eckes.
That was really awesome.
Yeah.
We should post some more of those in the next
few years. Yeah, we'll be posting some images. But yeah, if you haven't checked that out, he did a... someone commissioned him. This one, not the kind of thing you'll probably get for free at the store.
Right.
But someone commissioned him to do, was it Darth Vader Samurai?
Yes.
And the result was pretty awesome.
It looked great.
All right. On to the other news this week. So first of all, we'll round up a couple of TV and movie news. They've cast their Punisher.
Right.
So Daredevil Season 2 will definitely have the Punisher.
Yep.
We know this now, even though it's not happening until 2016, we already know.
Yeah.
And the person they cast is Jon Bernthal from Walking Dead.
Shane.
And
Scummy Shane.
And he's perfect casting.
Yeah. I think so too.
I think he's got that kind of intensity.
Yeah.
So from what I only know him from Walking Dead. He seems like a good solid actor.
He's in Wolf of Wall Street. He's good in that too.
Who was he in Wolf of Wall Street?
He's one of the scummy banker guys.
Oh yeah, I can completely see it.
You know all the guys in there. He's the scummy banker drug dealer guy.
I'll be curious to see what sort of take they have on the Punisher for Netflix. Whether
I don't know,
sort of flesh him out like what they're doing in Nathan Edmondson's run, give him a little bit more personality, maybe a few people helping him.
I suspect that they're going to be. He's not going to be his own series. He's going to be in Daredevil.
Right, but they'll just spin it out.
I suspect that we won't see any of the. I think he's going to be a foil, like he was. I mean, hopefully they'll adapt that Child's Play story that Frank Miller did way back in the day, where it's like Daredevil and Punisher are both dealing with the same guys, and they have different ways of going across it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, at this point in the show, Daredevil is only starting to be known by some of the cops as a good guy and not like, you know, like a serial killer or something like that. And if somebody does start popping people in and around Hell's Kitchen, that's going to really F things up for him.
Yeah.
So I can see how like the Punisher would be like I need to bring this guy
a
down
problem.
Fast.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. He's a good foil for the character, and Jon Bernthal's good casting. They've also said Gambit, who we know is Channing Tatum, and we know he's coming out apparently October 7th.
Did you reveal his secret identity on the podcast?
Yep, I did.
Oh, my God.
And no one would guess. He doesn't have the French accent.
That's right. You just turn it off and on.
And it's coming out October 7th, 2016. That's the world we live in. We know what movie release dates are over a year from now.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Gambit solo movie is going to be directed by Rupert Wyatt, who you may know, I didn't until I looked it up, that he is the director of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right. Which is a pretty good flick.
Which is a pretty good flick.
So, not enough to say that it's a lock or anything like that, but I think that bodes pretty well.
It's another good sign.
Good job, Raging Cajun.
Yes.
Your movie might not stink.
Starz has greenlit the first show for them. Starz had some shows. They've had Black Sails and Spartacus.
Yeah.
And
what's Black Sails?
Black Sails is their pirate show.
Yeah,
it's in season two.
Do they kind of do trashier shows like that?
Yeah, they've got a show called Power that I got at ATX Fest that I haven't watched yet, but it's sort of their version of Empire. But they can do more swears and violence and nudity and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But they have definitely been sort of more in that Cinemax vein. They haven't really had like a hit that I'd call sort of their big critical hit.
Truly great.
Yeah. But they have greenlit Neil Gaiman's American Gods.
Oh, that's pretty huge.
With Brian Fuller writing. Yep. Brian Fuller from Hannibal and Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, so they really
amazing
got
television.
They're getting some serious teams on board.
So I'm curious. I've read most of American Gods.
It sounds like Starz might be trying to kind of reinvent itself.
They are. They're definitely trying to. Yeah. All these pay channels are realizing that original content is where it's at.
Right.
This is where they want to be. They want to be an original content.
Model.
I mean, even like WGN, the network that basically shows Cubs games,
yeah,
they have some shows that they've been doing.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, like,
are they about the Cubs?
No, they should.
They should do.
Yes.
They should do this, like, gritty, in-depth look at, like, the life of a ball player with, like, the drugs and everything else going on in there and the gambling.
Actually,
that's
if they
what
were to,
ballers will be on HBO.
If they were actually do, like, a Major League-style show about sort of a gang of screw-ups who become the Cubs, that'd be funny. You could do a half-hour comedy of that.
I mean, even, like, Bravo is doing scripted television now.
Yep. Not a lot, but they did one.
They're doing another one, too.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah, it's like a half-hour comedy.
Okay.
Premiered this a couple weeks ago. It was actually really funny.
Okay.
So you were saying you've read American Gods, read most of it. I have not read it.
Have you read it, Nick?
I did.
I know it's one of his best received and most fondly looked upon novels.
I should say I didn't read it. This was an audiobook.
Uh-huh.
And it's a long audiobook. And I got to a point where I was like, okay, I don't know if I care enough to keep going. Gaiman, I respect Gaiman's work, but I don't think it doesn't connect with me for the most part.
I don't completely connect with him either. You know, it's like I can admire the greatness of craft.
Yes, that's exactly where I am. He does a lot of stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've read and liked all of Sandman.
Yeah.
And I've read a fair amount of his stuff.
You just don't like his real books.
But,
that aren't for dumb-dumbs.
No, because I don't like 1602 either.
Yeah, you know, I liked 1602, but it is for sure not him at his peak.
Yeah.
You know, I have a fondness for his novels, like,
Anansi Boys.
Anansi Boys, Neverwhere, which was actually, like, a radio dramatization.
Yeah.
And they did the book adaptation, and then they've gone on and done another radio adaptation that was actually really, really good not too long ago.
So but, what you're saying is there's a continuum here, as always.
I honestly think this is good news for Stars. It's good news for people who are fans of his work, because they've been clamoring to do an American Gods, whatever, a movie, a TV series,
you know,
for quite some time.
If it goes well, especially if it's sort of if it's pretty faithful, it kind of adds pressure to get Sandman and other projects right that we've been kind of wanting to see for ages.
Sandman is actually still in production, right?
With Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but it's not looking promising.
It's not. Right. I haven't heard much about it.
I don't know what the latest is either, but I just figure the more interest there is in adapting Gaiman's works, hopefully the higher the quality will be.
Yeah,
that did not prove to be the case with Alan Moore.
Nope.
But we are living in a different world now.
Okay, so this week was E3, which is the big video game. And there's some trailers and stuff out there, and
as we're recording this, so we're not going to, like, do any sort of exhaustive.
No, but there's lots of news. We, you know, all of us dabble in video games to some extent.
We all have video gaming systems.
We have our favorites. And, Dave, I know one of the releases is one that you are very excited about, The Last Guardian.
Right. Last Guardian is kind of one that I had no knowledge that it was even still going to be a thing, because I checked. The previous trailer for this came out in 2009.
Whoa.
It had to have been dead, or, like, you know, one guy was working on it or something like that. Last Guardian is the third game from what I think of as Team Ico. I think they usually actually went by that at one point. I don't know if they still do.
Yeah.
But they made the games, the sort of art, slightly indie art house adventure games, Ico, then Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
And this would have been the third one. And looking at the visuals, it very much shares their color palette, and I see elements of both of those games weaving into it. But it's sort of about a fantasy world, and it's a young boy who's got this creature, this, like, magical creature, sort of think the size of the Luck Dragon in what was that movie?
Neverending Story.
Neverending Story. It's kind of like a griffin or a chimera or something, like some kind of, but it has, like, dog-like
Peter
hands.
Griffin.
Thank you for the impromptu, Peter Griffin. That was great, Dad.
Is it Peter Griffin for Family Guy?
Yes, it is,
like,
actually that? Peter Griffin. It's actually a stealth Family Guy game. Now, these guys do games that are sort of, I guess I'd say, they tend to sort of in some ways be puzzle games, you know. Even in Shadow of the Colossus, you were trying to figure out the weaknesses of the giants and then stab the crap out of them.
Yep.
In Ico, it was more like this. There was sort of this ancient city to explore. But in this case, you've got you work in tandem. You've got the big creature, which obviously is going to move stuff, jump around. I don't know if it can fly, but probably not just fly, or you just fly to the end of the city and you're done. but it has like a strong AI personality. So it's like when you see the clips of it, It's like a dog, and I'm sure they're going to... If it dies at the end, this is going to be the cruelest game of all time. Even in the trailer, I was like, oh, it's so cute, oh... Because, like, you know, and it gets... Sometimes it's, like, too scared to go into some place, and you have to kind of lure it in and do, like, call it out or put food out to lure it. So it's like a puzzle game, as well as a... it's going to have that emotional content of games like Journey and stuff like that.
Hmm.
I did notice that the graphics, to me, look 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
I'm not a graphics snob, and I still think, like, graphics from 5 or 6 year old games, I think a lot of times they look great.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
Like, when I watch Mass Effect or something like that.
Right, right.
But I was like, it doesn't look as cutting edge as I feel like it should be after this giant ass wave.
Right, that maybe it was a last generation console that they're just porting over.
Maybe so. I'd still buy it in a heartbeat, just knowing this team's reputation and kind of having enjoyed all their previous games so much. I'll be sort of watching closely that development. I honestly thought it was dead.
A game that we all really enjoyed is Mass Effect, and they did reveal a new Mass Effect trailer, Mass Effect Andromeda. Which we don't know a ton about. It's just we know it's a different galaxy. The trailer just shows a bunch of people, somebody running around shooting in a N7 suit.
Yeah, well, you know, it starts out that somebody is like panning through, I think, all of maybe the locations that are going to be potentials that you can visit in this galaxy. You see, it's that what do you call those haptic screens, the floating screens, and they're like paging through all these locations, and there's like cool looking planet surfaces that have like fire whirlwinds on one and other kinds of craziness. And then they like warp there. And then there is that rapid montage you were talking about, Randy, of action scenes. You know, you got that, what's the sort of like electronic blade that appeared?
Omniblade.
The Omniblade. Yeah. I think, I don't know if I saw it for sure in there, but I was like, I'm sure it's going to use a lot of that in there. Yep. I think there's a big old slow-mo leap with that probably has the Omni tool at the end.
Yeah. I do feel like, I think Dave and I, you and I are both scared that we don't want to be a shooter. We don't want a shooter set in Mass Effect universe. Yeah, we want Mass Effect game.
This is like sort of the best RPGs I've basically ever played in my life.
Yeah.
And I want more of that. I understand. No more Commander Shepard.
Yep, that's fine.
That's perfectly fine. But yes, I would like something.
It's still BioWare, right?
Right.
BioWare doesn't seem to make games that are without a...
What if this is the first stinky one?
I mean, they don't make a game without sort of an RPG element. That's true, right?
Yeah.
Everything they do has RPG
elements. I think we can expect sort of the same level of craft and story that they've given us.
Yeah, before. We don't...
I mean, this is a teaser trailer.
Yeah.
What I'll be curious about is... They took a bit of flack for Dragon Age 2, which I know changed up the approach a lot.
Yeah.
Had fewer character building options. In fact, I think you might have just been one set character in Dragon Age 2. They know that fans didn't respond well to that, but I wonder if
back in Dragon Age Inquisition where they opened it up completely.
Dragon Age 2?
In Dragon Age Inquisition.
Inquisition, the newest one. Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought you meant that they had retro content for Dragon Age 2.
No.
They got back to
character. They basically went back to what they knew worked well, so...
Yeah.
What I'm just wondering is if they might... tweak the, obviously they're going to tweak the interface and the combat and all that stuff, but like, is it possible it's going to be a big tweak, like a very different kind of RPG? I guess we shall find out.
Well,
but
who knows?
I would place my bet on no.
The trailer I thought was just okay. The game itself I'm looking forward to no matter what.
Yeah, this is a big teaser for a game. It's not coming until holiday 2016, so we are way in advance of it.
That's the week after Gambit's coming out.
And that's a big if, because games get delayed
all the time.
So.
But the game that is coming out this year, holiday time, that I think we're all super excited for,
It's this year.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Had a big, long, extended trailer. It's Star Wars Battlefront. They did a big multiplayer trailer. It's like 4 minutes long.
It's
the Battle of Hoth.
Mechanics, and they jump back and forth between the opposing sides. So you see Imperials and Rebels.
And TIE fighter pilots, and a guy piling an AT-AT, and a guy blowing up an AT-AT. And
snow speeders.
In a lot of ways, what I was saying is, it looks like the same basic gameplay as the previous two Battlefront games, which, by the way, I love.
Oh, I did too.
But like polished to such a degree, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it looks amazing.
It looks amazing. Like every time that, like, you know, you'll hear one of your teammates shout out, like, you know, Imperial Walker approaching as it, you know, rounds a corner or something. So it gives you a stronger sense of environment and interactivity with it.
Well, the environments look amazing. Just the sense of just openness.
Well, yeah, when like the TIE fighters were flying by and like shooting, raining down fire on people.
Yeah.
They were kicking up snow and making great sound effects, which is always been a Star Wars trademark.
You see Star Destroyers looming in the
in orbit.
You see the big ion can firing away.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks about as perfect as you can hope.
There's also it looks like you can now, at least I would guess, if you're a rebel. Maybe choose, or maybe it's randomly chosen your race.
Yeah.
So like the guy who's like the whatever race he is for Nina.
Sullustan.
Sullustan, yes, from Return of the Jedi is one possibility.
There's a Rodian,
the AKA Greedo. Greedos. Is one of the rebel troopers we saw.
Did we see Wookiees?
I didn't see any Wookiees.
No, but last time you could play, I'm sure you can still play Wookiees.
And there's also as with the Battlefront 2, it looks like you get to play as the heroes sometimes.
Yeah.
If it's anything like Battlefront 2, you probably, when you're on sort of a takedown spree and you've killed a lot of people or you're in the lead, every once in a while you get to play as somebody big, in this case, Luke and Vader.
Yeah.
Who get some amazing scenes at the end of the trailer.
Yep.
And so you will get to see a lot of, you know, just that much more classic Star Wars iconography in it. But it looked amazing.
Yeah, I'm
ready for that to be out.
I am very excited about this game and plan to get it and play some multiplayer. All right, we'll be back in just a moment to talk about comics for this week. All right, we are talking comics for Wednesday, June 17th, and again, it's a big week. It's another big week. There's lots of big weeks. There's Secret Wars is still going on.
More small weeks.
DC is launching a bunch of new number ones.
There are no more small weeks.
But these are still lots of good weeks. There's so much good stuff right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to just start right off with, it's another Secret Wars week for me.
Yep.
Squadron Sinister number one. I did not expect to like this as much as I did.
I know, neither did I.
But basically, Squadron Sinister, if you don't know Squadron Supreme, Squadron Supreme is basically a Justice League knockoff.
They were meant to challenge like the Avengers.
They fought the Avengers. They're from a parallel world.
Right, to do Avengers versus Justice League without having to license.
But it's like Hyperion is Superman, and
Nighthawk is Batman, Doctor Spectrum is Green Lantern, Wizard is Flash, Werewolf is Wonder Woman.
They've done lots of different versions of these over the years.
Yes, they have, including a notable one that J. Wolfshinsky did about 10 years ago,
something like that.
Called Supreme Power. That had Hyperion, Nighthawk, Dr. Spectrum, Blur, Zarda. They were the sort of a more realistic, gritty version of them.
Yeah.
Well, this book opens with the Squadron Sinister murdering that team. basically,
you know what's funny is
wiping out Straczynski's version.
Yeah, I was talking about this with Nick earlier, and I was like, I remember that started off great.
Yeah.
Like, and then like just like every subsequent miniseries or store or like attempt to resurrect it, because they dropped like the mature readers rating.
Yeah.
And they merged it with some other world. Yeah. All this stuff.
The Ultimates world. That's right.
Like, there's even like Howard Chaykin was writing some side stories.
Yeah. Keep making mistake after mistake.
Right. So
after
they just
mistake.
Like it became, I think, sort of an embarrassment to Marvel. So yeah, it's kind of funny to have them go ahead and off that version right out of the
gates. So this is interesting because it is sort of authority-esque. Bad guys being bad, like the superpower guys are definitely, they run the world, they're annexing other worlds on Battleworld, they go in and they take other territories, and they're sort of on a detente with the Thors because they're not supposed to do that kind of thing.
As the time goes on with the Battleworld, or you know, with the Secret Wars event, the sort of definition of Battleworld kind of becomes clearer and clearer, and it's pretty clever how they've done it so that you have, you know, we're now getting a sense of the different factions, how they interrelate, how they war on each other, steal from each other, etc.
Well, my favorite thing in this is a thing that is going to be hard for, I mean, a lot of people may not notice this, but they are using characters from the new universe, which is not the wildest thing. Hickman's been using them in Avengers. But they also use guys from Shadowline, which is a 90s property that Marvel used that I did not expect to see ever again. So this is like a ton of different little smaller worlds, and the Squadron Sinister is going in and basically conquering them. And there's sort of the politics of ruling a kingdom combined with sort of being expansionist, combined with maybe a murder mystery that's going to come back on them. It's really interesting and has really nice art by Carlos Pacheco.
Yeah.
I really like this book and did not expect to like it as much as I did.
Yeah, it kind of relishes in its bad guys.
Yeah.
And does it in a way that is interesting. It doesn't feel like it's just blatant, you know. like violence porn, essentially.
Is it?
Yeah.
Are they still very Justice League-y? Or I mean,
yeah, they're,
but they're
like,
Justice League.
They're like the crime syndicate.
Yeah, they're the crime syndicate.
Now, here's my question: since you mentioned some of those like obscure references. New readers, is it approachable?
Yeah. You won't. You don't need to know it. It's just a cool little Easter egg if you do.
I see a lot more of that lately. It seems like sort of since the since the Marvel movies started getting it right, it seems like other people like Flash and stuff as well has have started getting it right. Where it's like you can throw out this stuff to the fans, but you need to have a hard. You need to have a tightly written story.
Yeah.
That doesn't rely on it.
Yeah, the Easter eggs are fun for fans, but you don't have to get them to enjoy the story. That's the trick with them.
Fun for fans.
Fun for fans. Nick,
it's just fun to say.
What's the Secret Wars book that we knew we'd enjoy and we wound up enjoying?
Yes.
I'm gonna write before you even say what it is.
What?
I have not been following the Secret Wars stuff as closely as you guys, and this was the book that like might well have been my pick had Nick not stolen it.
But I at least stole this one.
So I was not necessarily assuming I would enjoy it, and it was a great read.
Yeah. This one is Thor's number one.
Yep.
Thor's plural. Written by Jason Aaron, who's been writing Thor and all new Thor.
Yep.
With art by Chris Sprouse.
Yep.
Who actually just worked on with Grant Morrison, the Multiversity. The sort of Doc Fate one, so
right,
yeah.
The pulp one.
Just beautiful, beautiful work by him. But this is actually kind of interesting in the sense that it's a police procedural book,
right?
Yeah.
Somehow with the beefy Asgardian warriors.
Can we reveal who the main partners are?
Well, I think Jason Aaron summed up sort of the book and. He was saying it's basically life on the homicide, life on the street. If anybody remembers that television series, but with hammers.
Yeah.
Now I did not necessarily think that would work.
I wasn't sure it was going to work either, but it does.
What happens is it's actually structured in some ways on like I would say police procedural cliches.
Yeah.
Even a little bit. And I don't mean that like in a really harsh way, but in a fun way.
And you guys are going to hate or going to might kill me for this comparison, but it reminded me a lot of what Alan Moore did in Top Ten.
No, I can totally see that.
I can see that.
Top Ten was also built on sort of cop procedure.
Yeah, it was heavy into the investigative stuff.
Yeah.
But like you guys were saying, this is definitely focusing on a duo, a partnership between Better Ray Bill and Ultimate Thor.
Yeah.
Which they're all Thors, but they sort of have their own unique personalities and nicknames.
Didn't he call Thor Leifson or something like that?
Yeah,
right. They used other sort of names that, you know, like either come from mythology...
But he's referred to as the Ultimate Thor because he's
cracked so many cases.
He has been like the best cop.
Took down 13 Hulks.
Yeah,
and this is all sort of about them getting what is called an all thing, isn't that?
Right.
Which is a case that,
a major crime,
right? And of course, like in mythology and other previous Thor comics, I think that's like. I forget what it has a meaning in mythology, but it's like in the gathering of all the different. You know, the different nine worlds or something like that. But and this issue sort of gleefully appropriates mythology
and
turns it into cop stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. Aaron does a great job with it, but it's sort of just in the character interactions and sort of seeing, like, the Destroyer armor have sort of a personality.
And Groot Thor.
And Groot Thor.
I am Thor!
And maybe them dealing with some spirits of Ignition.
Yeah.
And just sort of... Them even dealing with Odin.
This may be my favorite Secret Wars book.
Can we say what the Spirits of Ignition thing is?
Yeah, we might as well.
I was just going to say, it's like, this is a pretty clever thing that basically, you know, that they've already done the
Ghost Racers
comic. Yeah, the Ghost Racers comic. And this sort of at least recasts them as they intersect with the Thors. As a biker gang,
yeah,
it's like cops investigating something that might have, you know, like, let's look into the biker gang influence.
Yep.
Yeah.
He really cleverly put this one together.
Yeah.
And it kind of covers all of the things you would expect sort of a procedural to cover, you know, like a Lethal Weapon or something like that with its things. And I was just really...
Sometimes when you get these crazy ideas like this, it's a little hard to plug into.
Yeah.
But what Aaron did that I think is important on these is that you have an the lead-in is really smooth and entertaining.
Yeah.
It's two cops at a crime scene, there's a body,
yep.
They're looking into it, so it's familiar ideas, And so you've got something you can kind of hold on to while you're getting all the crazy Thor stuff.
Yeah.
And how it mixes into it.
Yeah.
The only one I wasn't unsure about which Thor this was. He's called Stormborn.
That's from Jurgen's run.
Is that Jurgen's?
Yeah. Okay. Who basically took over the world.
Oh, that's right.
And so they've recast him in this as kind of like the arrogant jerk cop.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I couldn't place him, and I was like... Yep. I didn't read much of that,
right. Randy, I looked up one of the insider bits that I saw in here when Ultimate Thor is telling everybody to step away from the crime scene so they don't contaminate it. He says, take 9 steps back to somebody. I looked it up. Indeed, it is a reference famously in mythology, when Thor dies, he's bit by the Midgard serpent, takes 9 steps and dies. there's all sorts of fun little insider bits if you know your either Thor lore or mythology.
Yeah.
Or cop shows.
It's really fun. I think this is definitely this is probably my favorite of the Secret Wars books so far. It was great. Really fun. So Dave, what about you?
Right. So
what was your Secret Wars book this week?
My Secret Wars book is a DC book, despite
what?
Them. This was my pick is Dr. Fate. This was interesting because Dr. Fate, as Nick knows, I think you've always had some fondness for the character.
I think I have a fondness for basically what they did with him in Justice League Unlimited. Having Odette Fair giving him the voice definitely gave him some more personality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think just visually, he's a very striking character.
Yeah.
The helmet itself.
I would never argue with the visual. He has a great costume and look. I like the whole Egyptian motif and background.
Yeah.
And it's just that I've read so few good stories.
And wasn't the Justice League Unlimited gave it that his magic abilities always came out in sort of the Ankh?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just liked that visual.
They've done that before. I remember I've got some old Simonson stuff from like the 70s, and he had like when he was blasting somebody, it was like this Ankh sort of.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think that's just it's a great imagery. Visual and sort of making his magic abilities a little bit different from, say, Constantine's or Zatanna's. Or,
definitely.
Yeah.
It just gives him that more of a visual cue.
This is definitely a new character and new person. It's not, who was the guy who was previously?
Kent Nelson.
Kent Nelson is the most famous one. This is a new guy, he's a Muslim student?
Yeah.
Muslim American student in Brooklyn. And there's a weirdly linking up to us right now, there's massive flooding going on. This may or may not occur in Austin then in the next few days. But it's sort of like, has that sort of biblical end times thing. And indeed, there's like a talking jackal on the first page narrating it. Jackal, of course, is usually the harbinger of Anubis.
I actually like a talking jackal to narrate all my comics.
Right out of the bat, I enjoyed it because the art by Sonny Liu immediately grabbed me. It's a sort of cartoonier style of art, but cartoony in that sort of same way as, who's the guy who drew Fell?
Ben Temple Smith.
Ben Temple Smith. That sort of cartoony, where it's not like silly cartoony. It's got it enjoys its exaggeration, but it can kind of still be creepy and weird, and in a cool way.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Ben Temple Smith's art, but it's just got that kind of vibe.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
By the way, Paul Levitz is writing. Paul Levitz, who's one of DC's old guard.
Yep.
But like with the Huntress miniseries, or even what else did he worked on? World's Finest.
Yeah.
I feel like he's proven more adaptable than I expected. Every once in a while, there's some lines in here that are a little bit more that sort of old school exposition-y stuff from the Bronze Age. But it's about this kid sort of finding out that he may be the next Dr. Fate. He's like a student, it looks like. It is very sort of modern in the sense of this uses texting and stuff between he and a girlfriend. It's just sort of as moving the story along. There's also it's almost cinematic in a way. It's almost how I might imagine if they were to say bring in Fate into say the TV show Flash.
Right.
I could see it being like this. So it's a bit of a slow burn first issue in that sense, as he's kind of coming to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
The city has this pouring down rain. There's some bizarre speaking animals and weird hijinks at the museum.
Sure.
But it's all sort of, it's got sort of a very comic booky energy because of that Sonny Liu art.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a very pleasant surprise. It is the first time I've enjoyed a Dr. Fate story.
Probably something for fans of like Miss Marvel and Batgirl and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say sort of, the younger superheroes looking for sort of that next generation.
Yeah.
I think because, Kent Nelson has never been himself, like, a particularly memorably interesting character.
Right, right.
You know, I've seen decent stories with him in Justice Society and stuff, but he's just never jumped off the page for me.
Right.
I don't particularly mind a recasting on this right. one. Lots of people seem to have worn the Fate helmet over the years.
Yep.
I think it's a smart move.
But, and I would also, by the way, just recommend it if you're just looking for some a decent DC occult book. Or the, you know, some cool art like Sonny Liu's got going on.
Speaking of young characters, my cheater pick for this week is Runaways number one, which is, you may know we all love Runaways. This is not the traditional team. The only member of the team who's in there is Molly Hayes, a.k.a. Princess Powerful, although in this world she's called Bruiser. This takes place in Doomstadt in Secret Wars, and it is basically where they, it's the Victor Von Doom Institute for Gifted Youths. And this centers around a group of such gifted youths that have been thrown into detention for a crime that is revealed during the course of the book. And it has Jubilee and Pixie as members of a girl gang called the Night Witches, along with Delphine from Incredible Hulk.
Now, wait a second. Has what's her name from Runaways is not in a group called the Night Witches?
No, she desperately wants to be.
I was going to say. Well,
no, not Nico.
Nico. No, no.
She's not in there.
Nico's not in it. Nico's not in it.
How could they not use Nico?
I don't know.
Well, of course, there's more issues to come, so we'll see.
But there's also Cloak and Dagger, who appear to have their powers switched, Amadeus Cho, Scar. And basically, they're all thrown together, and there's sort of a Breakfast Club-y type thing where they're...
Star was the son of Hulk, right?
Yes. They're all sort of Breakfast Club-y together and dealing with detention, and of course dealing with becoming maybe Doom's, what they call Doom Youth.
Is that like the Hitler Youth?
Yes, yeah.
There's also a great bit role for Bucky.
Yeah, Bucky is like the big hall monitor main student. There's also a big reveal at the end as to who the headmaster is, which I thought was great.
Yeah, it's a great.
It's written by Noel Stevenson of Lumberjanes, and artist by Sanford Green is really, really nice looking. I really liked this book, and I did not expect to because I wasn't sure I wanted to see another group of characters take over the Runaways name.
Right.
But on Battleworld, I think this makes sense, and I like it's still about youthful rebellion and that kind of stuff.
A number of the Secret Wars books have sort of like taken like the concept or the title of whatever they're covering and use it sort of more as a springboard than a this is going to recreate yeah. you know the version you know.
Yep.
And they seem to be doing a very good job of it.
Also,
they sort of earned their stripes.
Also on my reading pile this week, Empty Zone number one, which is by Jason Sean Alexander, has this really beautiful art and is basically a cyberpunk type story, which we don't see a lot of in comics.
Yeah, if you're looking for cyberpunk, definitely give it a look.
Miss Marvel number 16, which starts the last days, which sees Miss Marvel interacting with the end of the world, which is, as with everything Miss Marvel does, it's superhero tropes viewed from a completely fresh viewpoint and yeah. really, really good.
Yeah, it's a great issue.
Mad Max Fury Road Furiosa is the next backstory prequel of the Mad Max series.
This is all Furiosa.
This is all Furiosa and the wives and is interesting. And
I believe you pointed out to Randy that the framework actually gives you some glimpses of the post-movie, what might have happened after the movie. So
a little glimpse. Plants vs. Zombies, if people have picked up the first two trades, I know my son just read the hardcovers. There's a new miniseries called Bully for You, same creative team that's been doing these. I read this out of curiosity, and it's really funny. There's a lot of sort of meta gags in here, and it's something that appeals to kids, but if you have played the Plants vs. Zombies game, it's got a lot of the jokes that I'd like in there. Also for kids this week, a weirdly sort of European-looking Minions from the upcoming comic. It's almost like Sergio Aragonés sort of, one-page strips or full of tons of pretty art. So yeah. Interesting if you are looking into that. DC has a bunch of books with really nice art this week. Prez number one, Martian Manhunter number one, Black Canary number one.
This is all part of their sort of relaunches.
Yep. Alex and Ada concludes with number 15, and it's a great finale.
Oh, nice.
I'm
behind on that, so I'm probably going to have to pick it up and trade to see the conclusion.
More Secret Wars, Armor Wars number 2, which has been pretty interesting. Usagi Yojimbo is back with the second part of his story involving the Neko Ninjas, and also Kitsune the Thief. And I can't believe they're paired them together before. It's such great fun, but that's always fun. Then in trades, there's a Gotham Academy trade, and the latest Usagi Yojimbo trade, which I believe catches us up to where the series is. Nick, what else is on your list?
I do have a cheater pick.
Okay.
This is actually a DC book. This is Robin, Son of Batman,
okay.
number one. written and drawn by Patrick Gleason, which I was a little worried about.
Uh-huh.
Mainly because he's never written anything before.
Sure.
He learned a lot from Peter Tomasi.
Okay.
And basically takes up the reins of what this book has been since number one, and I think continues on perfectly. The art is just as interesting. This is with him, Damian, dealing with things that occurred when he was being trained to take over the League of Assassins. So before he showed up on Batman's doorstep and became, you know, his son and mm-hmm. Robin, he's having to deal with sort of past things that he's done wrong. Certainly. Which I actually kind of really, really liked that take. But we also see he's got, you know, all of the sort of bat animals that he's collected over the years. You know, that's really good. He's actually added a new one.
What do you mean he's got collected?
Well, he has a bat hound.
He has, actually, I think it's Titus. Uh-huh. And he's got Alfred the cat. And then he's got the bat cow.
What?
Yeah.
You remember the bat cow. We talked about this before.
Right? I remember it. I just keep forgetting.
It's just crazy. Grant Morrison crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. But they're all there. And he's actually now got sort of something that is akin to, like, a man bat, but, like, a lion. I don't exactly know what it is.
Okay.
But it's,
so what you're saying, this is a backdoor super pets.
Maybe so. But
backdoor super pets was a mature reader's
title. Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
But Gleason gives all of this just such a fun world. I mean, he's beautiful. It has beautiful art. That's all I'll say.
He's beautiful?
Yes, he's also...
He's beautiful. Patrick, he's a beautiful Gleason man.
Is also I'm a beautiful, sure beautiful, beautiful man.
He might be. We don't know.
Also on my list is Deadpool's Secret Wars number 2, as Deadpool continues to muck around in the original Secret Wars. Runaways, you've already mentioned. Brian Hitch starts up his new Justice League of America run. Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. And
Justin Gray and Stefan Rue
all joined together to form Harley Quinn and Power Girl.
Yep.
Which sees its first issue tomorrow.
That's a miniseries, I believe.
I believe it is, too. Old Man Logan sees its second issue. And yeah, I think that's all that's on my list.
Dave, what else is on your list?
The handful of remaining ones I've got are the latest Astro City, which continues to follow their own super intelligent gorilla adventurer. Who wants to be a drummer. Really enjoying it. I haven't read this latest issue yet. I have every reason to believe it's going to be awesome.
But it has a gorilla drumming on the cover.
And wearing a tuxedo about halfway through the book.
So how bad could it be?
I've been enjoying the... having read that Action Comics issue, the Truth storyline that's weaving between all the different Superman books.
Yep.
And this week is the third part of it. It's in Superman Wonder Woman. And... I haven't read this one yet, but it's on my to read list. It had let's see, Peter Tomasi is writing and Doug Mankey on art, so it has a very strong pedigree. Really nice artwork on it, and has Superman and Wonder Woman sort of. It looks like investigating stuff and working through things, and a surprise appearance by a. Oh, I don't think it'll hurt to say a sort of suicidal bad guy team. you know who I'm talking about at the end. That may want to put that on somebody's radar. Lastly, there is a hardcover collection out this week from the manga horror master, Junji Ito. It's called Fragments of Horror. And Randy, I will turn to you to remind me, has this been reprinted before?
I don't think it has.
Because they did do those Museum of Horror.
They did Museum of Terror, Dark Horse. I don't know if this is the same stuff or different stuff.
Maybe this is for older kids. I said for older kids because I'm reading that on the back. They have rated T... For older teen. That's interesting.
Okay, all right.
I would definitely imagine anything by Junji Ito being for older teens.
Yeah. I feel like that's a fair way to put it. Your 13-year-old, maybe not. Your 17-year-old should be all right. But we have all enjoyed the stuff from Junji Ito. It is creepy.
Yeah.
It is drawn, and he has a really macabre style that I love. It's very detailed and sort of disturbing. So this is probably a must pick up for me and for hopefully for all of you horror fans out there. You should also check out what's his other book?
Gyo and Uzumaki.
Uzumaki just got the new printing though, right?
Yeah, both did.
Gyo just got a new printing.
Oh, okay, is Uzumaki still in print?
Yep, there's a new hard. It's a big hardcover. That's
I
all
would say that's his best one.
Yeah, I agree.
And Gyo has some directions I don't love in it, but has like some amazing stuff in it. So in other words, if you like Uzumaki, I would start with that. Then maybe check out these shorter horror stories, and then check out Gyo. But all horror fans should probably be reading his stuff.
Yeah, it's some of the best horror comics on the market. All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some movies and books and TV and other stuff. So, Nick, I hear that you visited Jurassic World this weekend.
I did. It was a lot of fun. I even got a Tumblr.
Oh.
No, Alamo Draft House was doing
it. So, Nick, when you said that, the first thing I thought of was a giant Batmobile.
The Batman? Yeah.
No. I got a glass. A Tumblr.
Oh.
Yeah, Alamo Draft House was doing sort of a special, and it has Chris Pratt and his four Velociraptors on it. And it is
amazing. His pet raptors.
Yes, his pet raptors. Really, though, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World is sort of one of those movies you can turn your brain off to. I mean, it really is all about the dinosaurs.
More so than, say, like the first movie was, which right. had a fairly, you know, notable plot and characters.
I mean, this isn't plotless or anything,
but you're mainly there for the dinos?
Yes. And the human
Where does it rank in the Jurassic...
Second. Okay. It's Jurassic really? Park, okay. Jurassic World, and then...
Two and three?
2 and 3 are very tied.
I never saw 3.
I actually just watched it the other day because they were all on sale at Best Buy and I had to buy them on Blu-ray.
So what we might say is we know you're in Dinos, big Dinos pop.
I really have always been, even as a kid, that's where it started. So I was very excited to see this movie. I like both of the leads. I like Chris Pratt a lot. I like Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yep.
They turn in, you know, solid performances. Vincent D'Onofrio is in it.
Does he play the Kingpin of Dinosaurs?
Yes, he plays the Kingpin of Dinosaurs.
Because that I would watch.
Who is Vincent D'Onofrio?
He plays an agent of Ingen, which you will remember as the people who were basically bankrolled.
Right. Ingen, the genetic...
Not Ingen, the racist term for Indians.
Right. Correct. Yeah, it took me a minute on that one, too.
Ingen.
Ingen, yes.
Okay. Yes, and then there are two kids, of course, because you always have to sort of see that angle in a Jurassic Park.
Is one of them a gymnast? One of them a hacker?
No, they're not, actually. One is knowledgeable about dinosaurs, but really doesn't...
Most kids are knowledgeable about dinosaurs.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a special ability.
That's the thing. And the other one is sort of, you know, just a typical teenager into girls, and then this situation occurs where a... new dinosaur that has been sort of genetically spliced from different... Their super dinosaur gets
loose.
I've seen
them in the trailers, yeah.
And,
I hear she's hunting for pleasure.
That's again, a different kind of movie.
She's hunting for sport.
She kills for pleasure.
She's hunting for pleasure, I think, is actually a Hall & Oates song.
I got nothing. That's pretty good, but yeah, I got
you guys are just killing this review. Really, you're gonna go see it.
How are the special effects on the big dinosaur?
Fantastic.
That's one of the okay,
I actually think they're even better. 2 and 3 by far better, and number one still has the sort of iconic ones. So,
right,
but with they've gone further with their, you know, the graphics on the dinos
and Chris Pratt's. League of like trained Velociraptors.
League of Extraordinary Raptors.
Yes,
I actually think that was actually pretty cool in the sense that he kind of connected with them when they were born, sort of like what they alluded to in the first one, sort of how Hammond wanted to be there. They imprinted on him, and it wasn't so much
that connection, like somebody like a cop and his dog.
Right. It wasn't so much that they would obey him, like, you know, without any issues.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still raptors. They still want to kill people. And they hunt. But...
for pleasure!
But he was definitely...
Get out of the jungle. The raptors are hunting for pleasure.
But... they were definitely
sorry,
more...
I'm not sorry.
Oh, my God.
I will say, I'm not apparently alone in my love of dinosaurs because... Jurassic World just set a new record for...
Oh, right. It had, like, a mega opening.
Mega opening. It bumped Avengers.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't need our good review or our money. They're doing just fine.
I'm going to say a dinosaur-sized opening.
But I think they were expecting, like, $125 million or $115.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting, like, $209 million.
So what you're saying is we will see Jurassic Universe in 2017?
Actually, they've already said that Chris Pratt has signed on to do the next one of this.
But is it going
to
be called Jurassic Universe and we'll be out in space? Because that'd be awesome.
I mean, sure, why not? yeah, no, I really enjoyed it.
So. I'm just saying, where do you go? Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Jurassic Universe.
No, they completely set it up.
Oh, really?
They actually had... do you remember B.D. Wong's character from the first one?
Nope.
He was the scientist...
Yeah, he was the scientist that was helping
in one of the labs.
In the main lab.
Yeah.
He actually reoccurs in this one, and his character continues on.
I'm not super excited for Jurassic World, but I think my girlfriend wants to see it, so there's a decent chance I'm going to see it.
Yep.
Well, there's some great dinosaurs, and they do, of course, say that these aren't what real dinosaurs are supposed to be. These are sort of mutations.
They got frog DNA in them.
More than that now.
I am excited for Jurassic Universe with a cross with the Guardians Galaxy.
That doesn't work because Chris Pratt could be.
They can do that. They can do that.
Are you saying like Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
Double Impact?
Like Double Impact, yes.
I'm picturing Randy as an intergalactic hunt for pleasure.
My segue was not gonna go with that. So I visited Disney this weekend.
You're gonna Pleasure Island, by chance.
And I was actually
like a big trip.
I did a big trip. This is the first time we've done Disney World since like 9 years ago. Both kids, you know, and we went for 5 days. Which don't go for 5 days. I had a good time, but oh my god! By the end, it was like just forced marching to get them to go. But we visited all four parks. We stayed at one of the hotels. We went to Magic Kingdom for a day and a half. Then we did Epcot. Then we did Hollywood Studios on their Star Wars weekend. And then we closed out both Animal Kingdom. Animal Kingdom is not unlike a Jurassic Park. There actually is even a Dino Land and a dinosaur ride and all that kind of stuff.
Is it? So I don't remember, or I don't know if that was even there when I went way back in like the early 90s or something.
Yeah, I think it was after that.
But is it like a zoo, basically?
It's a big... Apparently, Animal Kingdom is such a big park that actually you could fit the Magic Kingdom inside their, like, safari area. So it's like a conservation area, too, because they've partnered with this conservation safari, whatever they are, and they bring in animals and they keep them there to sort of... They had a black rhino. There are less than 5,000 of those left in the world. We saw it.
It's like a refuge.
Yeah. Kind of place. It's like a refuge. And there's a ride called the Kilimanjaro Safari, which we went on, and they drive you through and you can look at the animals. Now, they're not always out. Sometimes they're in their enclosure, but we lucked out. We saw the black rhino.
Are there dinosaurs?
We saw an elephant. We saw the giraffe. We saw a baby giraffe. We saw hippos.
Uh-huh.
We saw all these different animals. Then we walked the trail and we saw the gorilla. We saw the mama gorilla and the baby gorilla out.
Oh, cool!
It was very cool to see all these animals, and my kids really enjoyed that.
Drummers.
None of them were drummers that I know of, but I don't know. I didn't ask.
Mm-hmm. Next trip.
The cool thing about Disney is that they're so good at what they do. Like they have the Magical Express, where they're like your luggage. You tag your luggage when you give it to the airline, and it goes right to your hotel.
Right.
So like, and then
I remember like when I went there like 20 years ago, or actually more than 20 years ago, it was very polished.
Yeah.
It's like also ridiculous, like how clean they keep it.
Oh yeah,
like it's like you could throw down a piece of trash and look away for 1 second,
it'll
and
be gone,
and it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a different kind of world than most of your traditional amusement parks. But they also do the magic bands, which are little plastic bands you wear, and those are your keys to they get in, you can get into your hotel with them. Sure. You can charge things at every possible location. And you have a meal plan, so you can charge your snacks and your meals through them. You can also charge stuff for your room, which got dangerous. We bought, you know, I bought a Darth Vader Mickey Mouse ears hat. And Aaron, my son, got a R2-D2 Mickey Mouse ears. My daughter got Princess Leia Mickey Mouse ears. You get to do 3 fast passes a day, which means you get to mostly skip the line, which the thing is the lines are so huge that they're like literally an hour to go in the line. So basically, if you don't have a fast pass, you don't want to mess with it.
Yeah.
So we went on about 3 or 4 rides a day. But the ones we went on were really cool. Like that Safari we had a fast pass to, or Star Tours, or Space Mountain, which we actually managed to get on more than once.
What happens in Star Tours these days?
Star Tours, they changes up. There's like 20 different locales.
Oh, wow.
So
and by the way, when you're like going through in line and stuff, what is it? Does it look like you're going through like the interior of like a Rebel base? Or
no, a Rebel spaceport, because Star Tours is a spaceport, is a Star Tour. It's you're in a touring ship.
It was fairly recent when I went a zillion years ago, and I want to say it looked sort of like Mos Eisley.
Yeah. Well, it's a spaceport. It's not, yeah.
And I wondered if they like changed it up and like did it its own thing.
No, it's still its own. It's still
or,
a thing
or something different.
But on the ride, you're they do pick out a rebel spy out of the audience.
Oh, nice.
And Aaron was the rebel spy.
Nice.
So the thing is, he was staying right next to his sister, who we went on that ride like 10 times at Disneyland. She wanted to be the rebel spy, and she never was.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron was not thrilled to be the rebel spy. Right. And Katie was like, I should have switched seats with you. But. But it was a lot of fun. Space Mountain is great. Everybody loves Space Mountain. We went on Expedition Everest, which is this really cool big roller coaster over at Animal Kingdom. It's a lot of fun. It is immensely expensive. It is a lot of walking. It is very hot. So I don't know.
What temperatures were you hitting?
You know, it was probably like the 90s, but there's like cement everywhere and there's not enough shade.
Right. And well, if you're just walking around.
And if you're just walking around,
they have those misters and things.
They have misters and stuff, yeah. But it gets a little overwhelming. You know, I'm a fan of heat.
Yes.
And it got to be too much for me.
But you were wanting rain.
We had rain
like
the first day, yeah.
When the rain, when it's just like goes on for like 2 weeks, will break me. Even me, the rain fan, I will break under it.
Yeah. There's also, you know, lots of good food. We went to a replica of the Hollywood Brown Derby Diner, or not Hollywood Brown Derby, like restaurant. We got some really good sort of beef tenderloin meal.
Nice.
We went to Boma, which is sort of an African buffet, and had a lot of good food and fun stuff like that. So it's a fun experience. I think overall, I'm more of a Disneyland than Disney World fan.
Yeah.
I like everything being in one place. I don't need to walk around everywhere, but
right.
We saw Chinese acrobats at Epcot, and that was really cool.
Uh-huh.
We went to a teppanyaki type restaurant in Disney's Japan. It's one of those things, if you have the means, I highly recommend it at least once, maybe not more than once.
I have a quick question, a series of questions. What was your particular favorite experience there, barring like, say, meals?
I love Space Mountain.
Space Mountain is just a ride, right?
It's a roller coaster. It's an indoor.
It was broken when I was there, so I didn't get to go on Space Mountain.
Oh, really? Space Mountain is always my favorite, and nothing I've been on. Cool is Expedition Everest was cool.
Now, they changed it that much?
No, it's what it always has been. It's a roller coaster in the dark with sort of space effects around you, and it's really fast and it turns and it's just really well set up.
Yeah, I like to see that.
And we also went on Aerosmith's Rock and Roller Coaster, which was fun, and also in the dark. But honestly, of all the roller coasters, even of all the ones I've been on, Space Mountain is still my favorite. And it was my son's favorite ride, too.
And so that was my other question. For your kids, what were their favorites?
Aaron loves Space Mountain.
Right.
And Space Mountain is still Katie's favorite. I think she might like Star Tours a little bit more, but more at Disneyland where you could go down more than once and you could keep seeing the different stuff and all that kind of thing. So I think as a family, my wife also loves. So as a family, the Landers recommend Space Mountain.
Well, how much did they pay you, Randy?
They
got to you.
And the other thing is, like, Space Mountain's at Disneyland, and it's in the same place as Star Tours. So I feel like that's – like, if I could just go to Tomorrowland at Disney and just stay there and go out, bounce between those two rides, I'd be good. I don't need anything else. I also, while I was out, managed to do some reading, which I haven't done for a while. And I read the second Veronica Mars novel, Mr. Kiss and Tell. Which is about a.
I forgot they were doing novels.
Yeah, it's post movie, and they are dealing with some of the sort of corruption of the sheriff and that kind of stuff. And there was a subplot involving
created a dynasty of stories
involving Eli and what happens to him in the movie. So they pick up a lot of the threads that were left in the movie in these novels, and they're really good, really quick reads. I can definitely hear the voices. Rob Thomas co-writes them.
By the way, about Perfect Vacation reading.
Oh, it's great. I had it on my Kindle, and I've been wanting to read it for a while. So there are two of them. There's the $1,000 Tan Line and Mr. Kiss and Tell. They feel very Elmore Leonard-y, you know, that sort of quick read. Feel very Veronica Mars. They're co-written by Rob Thomas, who created the show. Definitely recommended. And then I also started diving into Leviathan Wakes, which I think we've talked about on the show before because Nick has read it. But that's what I'm going through right now. Nick, you've been watching some summer TV, though.
Yeah, I have. And actually, there have been a few notable ones pop up. But I want to talk about one. It is called The Whispers. It is on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
The cast is a bunch of people that they're character actors, so you'd recognize them. Like, Kristen Connolly is in it. Alan Ruck is in it.
Okay.
What is his name?
Milo Ventimiglia.
From Heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The basic story is that kids are sort of they're basically being visited by an entity that calls itself Drill, which is sort of deemed as sort of an imaginary friend to from a lot of their parents. but it's actually like an entity getting them to play a game and do various things. A lot of the kids that have been sort of visited by Drill are sort of people in various high standings, like with nuclear power plants and, you know, other things like that. And there's this weird kind of supernatural element to the show, and of course with this, but there's also, you know, a plane disappearing and reappearing in pieces in, like, West Africa. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more engaging than I was ever anticipating.
It sounds a little like what the build-up stuff in the movie Close Encounters, you know, they slowly kind of begin to uncover.
Yeah, and it is sort of that slow build because it's mainly focuses on an FBI agent, a woman sort of coming back to the job after her husband, which was the pilot of this plane, disappeared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking he's dead and all this other stuff, and focuses on her and then another guy who is, I think, NSA, because he's a little higher up, and dealing with sort of the plane and whether, you know, sort of the supernatural aspects of the show. Mm. And it's sort of how they correspond and sort of learn about this. But I actually think the kid actors...
Now, is it supernatural or is it aliens?
Definitely aliens at this point. It's not supernatural. There's aspects that could be labeled that, but
it's probably more like telekinesis instead of...
Yeah, it's more along those lines. Magic floaty. And I actually will say, a lot of the times I think kid actors are a misstep.
Yeah.
The kid actors that they've cast in this have been really, really good. they're able to carry the scenes.
It's pretty notable sort of, when you see a good kid actor.
Well, and when they're basically talking to nothing and sort of reacting to it and still coming across as believable, I think, is very impressive. And I just think...
The stuff that you said was like an imaginary friend.
Yeah, it's basically them talking to an imaginary friend, which is not so imaginary.
It's not imaginary.
an actual entity that is trying to do something that it will cause some sort of global meltdown and destruction. And sort of... it's just interesting. And I'm becoming more and more intrigued with it.
It sounds
every
like it's
episode.
Got stuff that's up my alley. So I need to see if I can get my hand on the first episode.
I think
two.
I mean ABC is one of those ones.
ABC is surely online. I'm sure you could watch it on ABC.com.
Yeah,
or something
I would
like
give.
That.
I'd probably give the first two episodes a look because the first one kind of sets a lot of things up, but it's also kind of a slow burn, like the show is. But the second episode definitely picks things up.
Cool.
But I really, really liked it.
All right. Well, that'll about wrap it up for us this week. So until next time. Yo, Joe!
Pleasure!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rogues Gallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.